From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Donald Trump continues to dig his heels in about losing the race for president to Joe Biden and has been lobbing one unsuccessful legal challenge after another. As Arizona's official election tally handed that state's electoral college votes to Biden as well, the race seems to be a landslide win for the former vice president. And while the nation is now all but assured that Biden will take the helm of the White House in January, how deep will Trump's damage be to the nation as he leaves office? Joining me to help answer that question is Corey Brettschneider, professor of political science at Brown University. He's the author of a number of books, including When the State Speaks, What Should It Say? How Democracies Can Protect Expression and Promote Equality, as well as The Oath and the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents, and The Decisions and Dissents of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. His latest article in The Guardian is called Don't Underestimate the Threat to American Democracy at This Moment. He's a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Corey.
Thanks, Sonali. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
So these legal challenges that have even embarrassed the law firms of some of the lawyers working on them have been largely unsuccessful. Trump launched several before the election and, of course, continues to launch many after the election. Most, if not all, have failed. I think there was one decision in Pennsylvania where a judge granted him some leeway.
Yeah, it's because there's no evidence. The president, you know, as he often does, makes assertions with nothing backing it up. And then basically advisors, and in this case, lawyers, have to scramble to try to figure out how to make good on that promise. And in this case, there just is simply no evidence. It's as bad as it looks, except in one case. There is one very serious case that I think, if it went to the Supreme Court, that the president could win. And that involves, I don't know if it's the same one you were thinking of, but it involves Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania state legislature had passed a deadline, basically, for counting votes, that votes received after Election Day wouldn't be included in the full tally. But the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania said, look, there are other competing considerations here, basically democracy. And they said this deadline, you know, doesn't cohere with the law overall. Now the
ballots at stake in that case were ballots that were cast before
exactly.
The election.
That's what I was going to say. That it makes no difference to the outcome, because I think quite brilliantly the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania just cordoned off those ballots, knowing that they could be subject to challenge. And she's said quite clearly the numbers are not even close to being able to affect Pennsylvania's total outcome. So the one serious case would make a difference and is completely moot from the standpoint of the election. And the rest, to my mind, I mean, there's stuff about Sharpies. So-called poll watchers who claim they weren't treated very nicely. It's just a mess. And, you know, it's unethical for lawyers to be bringing some of these suits without evidence. And I just saw one of the firms dropped out in one of the cases that was claiming wholesale fraud in Pennsylvania with no evidence. And that's because, you know, a lawyer has to care about his or her license, and you can't bring false claims without facing sanction. And so, you know, you don't want to go down with this ship.
Right. And in Pennsylvania, even if Trump wins that, and of course it makes little difference to the election outcome, the difference it does make is that voters are disenfranchised. Those voters whose ballots, if the Supreme Court decides, don't count, you know, even if your vote doesn't make a difference to the outcome, it's important to have that vote and have it be counted. And doesn't this damage the integrity of future elections? All of these relentless attacks. I mean, he is eroding trust in elections at the same time as election officials around the country are saying that this was the most secure election in recent history.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's part of the point of my piece, that our system is more fragile than we realize. And when you have somebody who's as powerful and as powerful in office as the president of the United States calling the whole thing into question, it's a real problem. And as I say in the article, you know, this is incredible to say. I never would have predicted when in any of our previous conversations I'd be uttering these words. But Fox News' decision, basically on election day, election night, and following, to report the actual numbers, to call Arizona for Biden, You know, that was really a rebuke to Trump's series of lies and to his system of conspiracy and nonsense posing as truth. And if they hadn't done that, you know, if this billionaire, Rupert Murdoch, hadn't made that decision, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Fox is some heroic or Murdoch is some hero. To the contrary, it shows the fragility of the system that we had to rely on that. And some of their evening hosts were a little slow, but I think are now catching up to the fact that, you know, you've got to say the basic truth. Now, imagine if they hadn't done that, if they were acting like OAN or any of these other completely frivolous networks that are not doing anything remotely connected to fact, or doing just conspiracy, we'd be in a totally different world right now.
Just a quote from one interaction that is apparently typical of many interactions in courts around the country where Trump has brought his legal cases. The Pennsylvania case, the judge asked the lawyer in question, this is one of Trump's lawyers, I understand I'm asking you a specific question and I'm looking for a specific answer. Are you claiming that there is any fraud in connection with these 592 disputed ballots? These are the ballots that they're disputing because they arrived after election day, even though they were cast before. The lawyer replies, to my knowledge at present, no. The judge asked, are you claiming that there is any undue or proper influence upon the elector with respect to those 592 ballots? The lawyer says, to my knowledge at present, no. So when these lawsuits are actually being unraveled and the getting into the details of them, they are being found to have no merit. But Trump, this is the most important part, he is getting the cover to say, we've launched lawsuits in state after state after state over all this widespread voter fraud.
Yeah, I don't think they really are about the law, most of them, the vast majority. I think they're about, again, covering his claim, his desire to stoke controversy. And, you know, there's a pernicious plan here, too, that's been reported on the last few days. And then before that, I was seeing elements of it, which is, if he can call into doubt using these lawsuits as sort of pawns, the outcome of the election in some of these states, his hope is that the Republican state legislatures in these various states will then throw the election to him, saying we can't trust the outcome. The secretaries of state weren't playing by the rules. And so we're going to appoint Trump electors to go to take votes to the Electoral College, and that will either give Trump an outright victory or, more likely, deprive Joe Biden of the 270 votes that he needs in order to take the presidency. That would then throw it to the House of Representatives, where a really bizarre process happens, which is that we count not by member, but by state. And I think the Trump team thinks that they've calculated that because of the way the House is set up, that they could win most states and take the presidency that way. That's a really frightening idea. I don't think it's going to come to pass, but I think that's the grand strategy here. Let's remember, too, that Bush versus Gore, and this worries me about the Pennsylvania suit because this is part of it, had two arguments in it. One is a majority argument that the Equal Protection Clause demanded counting ballots equally. Justice Ginsburg replied to that, you know, I'm all for the Equal Protection Clause, but that's, you know, you can't just come up with a random claim like that out of, you know, the blue and then use that. So that kind of claim, you know, is one worry. But the really worrying one is the concurrence in Bush versus Gore talked about the importance of state legislatures in setting deadlines, making the rules, really in having control over the electors. And my worry is that, you know, one of the worst hacks on the court, somebody like Kavanaugh, has thrown a little bit of wind in that direction, suggesting that he might back such a claim. Now, that would be a horrific, really unprecedented coup.
Right. Let's call it that.
The Supreme Court would do that. But I hope and don't think that will happen. But that is the grand strategy here, to throw, use the lawsuits, throw doubt into the vote count, and then have the state houses, which are filled with Trump supporters, majority Republican, throw those electors to Trump.
And this is based on the fact that we have this bizarre, obscure, obsolete system of the Electoral College. Now, in 4 years ago, when Trump won the Electoral College but lost the popular vote, there was talk from the Democrat side for electors to cast their votes for Hillary Clinton, and I believe a small handful did. You could almost sort of see where they were coming from because of the discrepancy between winning the Electoral College but Trump losing the popular vote, that these electors wanted to, you know, respect the results of the popular vote. This time round, Trump has lost not just the Electoral College, but has lost the popular vote by a lot and counting, millions and millions and millions of votes. And Colorado passed the National Popular Vote Pact, which is one way for states to get together to undermine the Electoral College system. So we also have to remind ourselves, we wouldn't be having any of these conversations, and Trump couldn't be launching any of these legal challenges if we just had a popular vote for president.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, really, it has to be at the top of the Democrats' agenda going forward into the next administration to reform the system. Because what I just told you is the fact that it's a possibility is totally outrageous in a supposed democracy. There should be a system that, very straightforward, the winner of the majority of the country wins, and that doesn't allow for all these strange moments. Now, I'll say something about those were called faithless electors that went to the Supreme Court. My former law professor, Larry Lessig, I think in an attempt to show that the system is flawed, defended them, saying, look, the setup of the original system really has these electors, gives them the discretion to make the decision as they want. Now, what the Supreme Court said overwhelmingly in response to that argument, with all due respect to my former professor, they said, we're not going to go along with a national, basically invite a national emergency. Now, if they said that in that case, they sure better say that in this case, if it ever gets to them, because the idea that you would allow state houses to basically steal the vote for this president because of some original understanding of the 18th century mechanism of the Electoral College is way more outrageous than allowing a few faithless electors to switch their vote.
On Friday, New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman wrote a piece entitled "Trump Floats Improbable Survival Scenarios as He Ponders His Future." And she is saying, and she's been one of these reporters who's really been on the Trump beat, one of the top reporters in the Trump presidency, finding inside information. She says, there is no grand strategy. President Trump is simply trying to survive from one news cycle to the next. And indeed, this is a man who has survived thousands of lawsuits against him. He's seemingly untouchable. He seems to escape accountability over and over and over again. And he does that by sheer ruthlessness and relentless attacking at any stage and in any way he possibly can. Is it just possible that Trump will, he doesn't care about destroying faith in the election. He cares only for himself, as he's done from day one. And I mean, he may take down the integrity of our elections with him as he leaves kicking and screaming from the White House.
My worry about him has always been his unpredictability. I think that it's right that he isn't really a brilliant strategist himself. And
he's a survivalist.
too lazy to carry out a coup and not organized enough. But he's willing to do what it takes if he sees an option. And so if he has advisors around him, as I think he does, that's what the reporting suggests, who have told them about this wild plan about state legislatures, he'll go for it.
Right.
And, the system is more, again, as I say in the piece, more vulnerable than we think. I was talking there about news media and popular perception, but there also is this concern that this antiquated electoral college has these holes in it that, I mean, I wouldn't say it's zero votes for this idea that state legislatures can overturn the election of their state and send the electors that they want. I think Justice Thomas, for instance, almost certainly would agree with that theory. It looks like Justice Kavanaugh, that's two. That's way too close, in my estimation, for allowing what is, again, essentially undermining of a U.S. election and a kind of court-endorsed coup. That is frightening, and we've got to change that system immediately.
I want to pick up on one of the things that you say in your article in The Guardian, don't underestimate the threat to American democracy at this moment. And that is the role that social media has played in all of this. Not only does Trump use social media as his platform to spread lies, his supporters organize in that way. And even when they might be banned from Twitter or Facebook, they've actually gone to third party, if you will, or, you know, just sort of lesser known social media and networking platforms. But for Trump himself, I mean, he has tens of millions of followers on Twitter, and the closest that Twitter has come to holding him accountable for spreading wild lies and conspiracies in any way is to label his tweets before, during, and after the election, you know, flagging it, saying, well, this is not quite true. There's another side to this. What do you make of this?
I think it's a start. And I thought Twitter did better than Facebook. Facebook really was sort of saying that this claim is contested, which I think is actually maybe more dangerous than doing nothing at all, because it has that sort of two sides to the story element to it. So I was really disappointed with Facebook's response, or they were linking to a website with information. Twitter was stronger. They were at one point really not allowing you to see the tweet. Originally, you had to sort of click through and see something that basically was a fact check. Then I saw other things on Twitter that were more akin to what Facebook was doing. I think the strongest, what they should do is what the networks did, which including Fox News, which is to say this is false.
And Fox News cut away from Kayleigh McEnany when she was making claims of voter fraud. And I believe it was Neil Cavuto, a Fox Business host, who was like, I can't keep playing this, because until she brings credible evidence, we can't keep playing this.
And I saw Shepard Smith do a similar thing. And the president's, when the president spoke, they cut away, as did the other networks. I think CNN stayed with it, but Fox actually cut away. So that's what I think you need to do with this president when it comes to something so fragile. We have a robust tradition of free speech in this country that I endorse and am proud of. We've done discussions about this. But first of all, this is a pivotal moment in American democracy. The danger is very high. This president has incited violence before. He could do so again. He certainly could undermine the election if he's allowed to lie with impunity. And it's not censorship. Nobody's putting him in jail for what he's saying, but it's not providing him a platform to spread his lies and misinformation completely unfounded. So fact-checking, as, again, it's incredible that I'm saying this, as Fox News did, that's what I think we should see from Twitter. They've sort of moved in that direction, but haven't gone far enough. When it comes to Facebook, they really have completely failed in their duty.
So when we look at how to move forward in terms of our legal system as well, will any of these lawyers, will Trump's team, will anybody face any pushback for bringing these frivolous lawsuits? I mean, they're tying up the courts. They're using, resources that are meant to be respected.
One thing that the Lincoln Project has done is target the law firms for exactly that reason. And I think they will take a hit factually. If you're, you know, a law firm trying to recruit top law graduates and your reputation is that the Lincoln Project, has really connected them to the Trump family. There's a video also that was made, not by them, but some other group, kind of mocking the, one of the law firms for being so closely tied to, the liars. Let's just be blunt about it. So I think that will hurt them with recruitment of people of integrity. I think, too, clients are going to think twice about going to law firms that tied themselves to this mess. And, everybody, people commit crimes are entitled to defenses, but you can't go into court with lies. That's a limit on the ethical duties of lawyers. And if you're defending some of these suits, that's outrageous. Now, one of the firms is saying that they're only going to argue that Pennsylvania case, which, as I said, is frightening, but a real legal case. That's one thing. But, I think that they might be backing off as a result of pressure.
There was this one of a Reuters Ipsos poll that was conducted on Saturday. It was published Tuesday, but it was conducted the day that Joe Biden was called, by the Associated Press for president. And it said something that about 80% of Americans, accepted the fact that Biden is now the president-elect. There was another poll showing of Republicans only, that something like 70% of Republicans, and I suspect that poll might have been done a day or two later, 70% of Republicans questioned the integrity of the election, questioned whether Joe Biden was really the president-elect. And it's very possible, I'm speculating here, that in those few days after the election was called for Biden and when Trump and his allies, including the Republican Party, we should add, maintained without evidence that somehow Biden hadn't won, that the minds of Trump backers were changed and they will move forward into Biden's presidency, not seeing him as a real winner of the election.
Yeah, that was when I wrote that piece. Why I wrote the piece, because I'm so worried about that number. I think it would have been a lot higher had it not been for Fox News, as we've been talking about. But, you know, there's a chance that it's too late in some ways for a huge portion of these voters. And in a way, it's a sort of in microcosm what the Republican Party did over many years, which is to use these dog whistles of white supremacy and kind of flirt with white supremacy to keep their base happy. Then when a lot of those people thought, you know, I'm not on board with explicit racism, it was too late. Now, Fox News has been part of that, of building Trump up. Now that they want to tear him down and they recognize him for the fraud that he is, I hope it's not too late. Certainly the president is flirting with starting his own media organizations or teaming up with some of the what have been rightly fringe organizations. You know, let's see if Fox can pull them back. The fact that we're at 70% must be them. I think that's got to be what happened. Wow. But that's still a very troubling number of 70% of one of the two major parties is right, doubting the outcome, doubting the legitimacy of the rightful next president, Joe Biden. We're in real trouble.
Right. And then you have, I mentioned the Republican Party, you have Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham throwing their weight behind Trump. Majority of the Senate Republicans still sticking by him. A handful of them have come out, you know, and faced reality. Karl Rove is telling Trump he needs to, you know, see the writing on the wall. But there's these loyalists. Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, said we expect a transition into the second term. And just on Friday, Peter Navarro, a Trump advisor, said, we're moving forward here at the White House under the assumption that there will be a second Trump term. I mean, it's just bizarre that he's either they truly believe this or they are part of his fraud, right? Because if we're talking about any fraud in the election, it's Trump.
And Pompeo, I saw that statement. I mean, Pompeo is a lawyer. You know, he's got a basic duty to not lie to the American people. Thankfully, you know, I'm seeing Boris Johnson running for cover and recognizing that Biden is the next president and distancing himself from Trump. So as world leaders, China did the same. You know, I hope the Secretary of State, you know, gets out of his strange bubble where he thinks that he's going to fight this thing. Unfortunately, I do think that Pompeo is one of the people who indicated that this plan that I talked of, this nefarious plan to use the state legislatures to throw the electors to Trump, if you listen and parsed his words, he's, you know, in addition to saying, you know, this supposed joke about the transitions going smoothly to the second Trump term, he also talked about how the election is constitutionally governed, not governed by, you know, an election. And what he meant by that, I think, and I worry, was this plan about the state legislatures. That's really... Right. I mean, you can't use terms that are too strong to describe how really un-American is what I'd say about that, and undemocratic.
Well, Corey, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article from our website. And of course, all eyes will be on what damage Trump does in leaving the White House. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
My guest has been Corey Brettschneider. He's a professor of political science at Brown University. He's written a number of books, including The Oath and the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents, and The Decisions and Dissents of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. His latest article in The Guardian is called Don't Underestimate the Threat to American Democracy at This Moment. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.